pretty close. Pretty close. You want to turn to John chapter 2. John chapter 2, we are going to be there in just a minute. So happy Mother's Day. Happy future Mother's Day, right? Well, Christina just left. And when are y'all due, Luke? June 9th. That's coming pretty close. Sabrina, I didn't even ask your due date.
December.
In December, so a little longer. So, anybody else want to announce this morning? Anybody? Anybody? I can't even remember. I said something to Karen about something the other day, and I don't know. And she said, "I'm not pregnant," or I don't even remember what. What was that? I don't even remember. I was like, "Well, good night. I'm thankful for that." And it was, I don't even remember what we were talking about at this point. So I'm sorry if you're visiting. I ramble at times, so it's good, Robbie, having you here. I know I met you once before, and your friend Ken. I'm glad to have you guys here, and good to see you guys back. It's wonderful. Both we got two sets of visitors that we love and care about. It's good stuff. Mother's Day. I was bowling a tournament about 2 months ago, and the way this tournament works is a doubles tournament, and we have two other groups that bowled on the same pair as us, and the way it works is you bowl on this set of lanes, and then you bowl another game, and they move you from lane to lane to lane, and so we have basically six of us that are on the same pair, and so I met two other people that I've never met before. And so we're talking along the way as we're shifting from lane to lane. And I found out a little bit about this older guy. He was a retired, semi-retired accountant. And so he obviously asked me, "What do you do?" And I said, "Well, I'm a preacher." And he said, "Oh, that's interesting." And so I said, "Well, yeah, so I think it's always interesting." And so we had a conversation. And little by little, as we continued to talk, he asked me this question, and I thought it was interesting. He goes, "Can I ask you a question?" "Yes." "What do you preach on when you preach on Mother's Day?" And I said, "Well, you know, honestly," I said, I've never preached on Mother's Day before. And he says, "Well, would you do me a favor?" He said, "Because, you know, the guy at my church and the other churches that I've been to," he goes, "they bash you as fathers on Father's Day, and mothers, they just say, 'Oh, they're so wonderful, they're great, they're beautiful, they're this and they're that.' And then on Father's Day, we just get hammered, you know?" And I went, "Wow, really?" I said, "I guess that's kind of sad." But I was thinking, you know, the very first time I preached at Open Door was Father's Day. And I did a lesson on fathers and how important it was for us to kind of step up our game, right? So I went, "Well, maybe that's what we do." So I'm going to bash mothers this morning. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that. We're going to talk about how amazing moms are, right? And moms. But more important, we're going to talk about Mary. I just thought, you know, I was thinking of the greatest mom who ever lived, and I think it has to be Mary. She was chosen by all the, out of all the women in the world, to give birth to Jesus. I mean, how cool is that? She had to be a pretty special person. From what the commentaries tell us, from what the experts tell us, she was most likely a teenager. And so here's this young heart, this young faith, this young lady who is put in the midst of controversy and struggle because she was single. She had to try and explain. I mean, she's engaged, but at the same time, you know, try and explain it to Joseph. And Joseph kind of flips out too. And I think rightly so, trying to understand it all. But the reality is that Mary was chosen. She's a pretty special mom. And so the text this morning from John 2 will kind of help us understand her heart maybe just a little bit. But I've often wondered, what was Mary's and Jesus' relationship growing up? You know, we really just don't get much from Jesus, right? Growing up, we have this, you know, the birth story. As I mentioned last week, we have this story about Jesus when he's 12 years old at the temple. And then from 12 to 30, nothing. You would think that, you know, God in the flesh comes down from heaven and somebody would jot it down. You know, what took place? What happened during the teenage years? I mean, what kind of a guy was he? I mean, I always wondered, what was Mary and Jesus' relationship like? What was Jesus like as a teenager? It's kind of an interesting question. I mean, did he have a girlfriend? Did he have pimples? I mean, I want to know, did Mary ever make him get a haircut he didn't like? Did Did Mary ever get on to Jesus for horsing around? Did Mary ever walk into Jesus' room and go, "Oh my goodness, this place is a mess. Were you born in a barn?" Oh yeah, well maybe so, right? I mean, what was it like? What was it like? Like you get one, you know when you get one person figures it out, all right? That was good. But what would it have been like to have spent time with Jesus? And how was their relationship? And you kind of see it off and on in different ways. But let's dive into the scene this morning because it's kind of an interesting time. Jesus is now 30 years old. His ministry is not supposed to begin yet. And yet he gets a little push. He gets a little shove from his mama. All right. And so let's read the text and we'll explore the dimensions. John 2, 1 through 10. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. So we have this scenario. We talked a little bit about this. If you're visiting and you weren't here last week, I'll try and help you a little bit. We talked about the second coming of Christ last week and how we use our time. We were finishing up a four-lesson series on time and how important it is to focus on the things that are coming, you know, and especially thinking about the second coming of Christ. And the second coming of Christ was very similar to a wedding feast and the whole wedding engagement and all the things that took place around a Jewish wedding. Their weddings were far more elaborate than ours. They were far more lengthy. They spent a lot more time in the whole process. And I've been to, I think a Catholic wedding is probably the longest that I've ever been to. It was a pretty much from the beginning of the morning to the end of the evening kind of a day. So it was almost an entire day, but not these. These are like 7 days long. They were major feasts. It was an important part of their culture. If you think about Judges chapter 14, when Samson is a young man and he sees that Philistine woman and he's like, "I want to marry her." And on the way there, he kills the lion. I don't know if you remember the whole story, but he's at the wedding feast later on. And it says on the seventh day of the feast, which even back then, 7 days. It was a 7 day, a week long feast. This is most likely what's taking place in Cana of Galilee. If you remember, the groom would leave to prepare the wedding chamber in his father's house. He would say, "I'm going to my father's house to prepare a place for you." Just like Jesus is telling us, he's going to go prepare a place for us. Nowadays, and Lisa and I were just talking about this, the chupa is in a Jewish wedding nowadays. You'll see this laced, beautiful little, what do you call it, canopy? That'd be a fair word. And that was representative of this chamber that he would have created in his father's house. And it was representative of the beauty that was going to take place and the life they were going to live together. All of those things were important. If you remember, the groom and their friends got close to the bride's house. They'd give a shout and blow a shofar, trying to catch you guys up. And so, just like in 1 Thessalonians 5, when Jesus comes back to collect his bride, the Bible says, Paul writes in 1 Thessalonians, there'll be a shout and the blast of a trumpet. It was a reminder, "Hey, I'm here to pick you up. It's time for us to go to our father's house, my father's house." When the wedding party arrived at the father's house, the newlyweds would go into the honeymoon chamber and they'd usually be there for a week, right? And all this feasting would take place and they would provide this food. They would provide this wine. They would provide all the things necessary for this party to take place for this week. It was something that was planned from the time they were engaged. And sometimes that was at a very young age. And so even if you were poor, you would save out part of your money, not only to give in the temple and not only to provide for your family, but you would save back some dowry. You would save back some money because this feast was a big deal. You say, well, Mike, why is that a big deal this morning? Because regardless of what we know about what we plan for, they can't just, you know, they can't just go, hey, we ran out of Diet Dr. Pepper. Can you run down to Walmart and get some more? You know, kind of a deal. I mean, this had to be prepared for in advance and ready to go. And so when Mary, who has skin in the game, we don't know who is getting married in this particular story. Some experts say it could have been one of her other sons or other daughters. Could have been somebody close to her. But she's involved in the timeline because she pokes her nose in. One author said that she's a meddling mother in Cana of Galilee. That she's going to get her skin in the game. Her nose is going to be involved in what's taking place. You say, well, is it a big deal? It's a huge deal because they run out of wine. And you plan all this and you're ready to celebrate with all the friends and the family. And all of a sudden you run out of one of the key elements, you know, the thing that you would drink. And it wasn't like a party type of an atmosphere. And so I want to talk about that for just a second. And I have a side note. And I don't normally do this. I don't like to talk a lot about historical things, but every commentary, everything you read about this feast talks about this question. Was the wine that Jesus made alcoholic or non-alcoholic? And some guys wrote chapters on this deal. And it's interesting to me because knowing the feasts and reading about them already, it shouldn't even be a point. Because that's not how they drank wine back then. All right? The way they drank wine back then was totally different from the way that we would drink it in 2016. It was rarely drank straight from the bottle or straight from the wineskin. All right? They didn't just blah, 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 drink wine. They didn't pour the glasses out. They watered it down. They would always water it down. In fact, it was considered barbaric not to water it down. According to John MacArthur, an expert, he said in ancient times, wine was usually mixed with water. There's numerous references in Greek and Roman literature, but ratios were anywhere from 2 to 1 to 20 to 1. Two parts water, one part wine. That would be considered pretty strong. Okay, 1 to 1 was considered strong drink. In fact, it's the exact same words mentioned by Paul in 1 Timothy when he says that deacons shouldn't be drinking strong drink, a 1 to 1 ratio of wine. Not just straight up wine, 1 to 1. All right, so we have this as a reference. You say, well, Mike, is it really important? I think it is, and I'll tell you why. Because we spend all this time talking about how Jesus did what he did, and we forget there was a miracle that kind of took place there, and the miracle itself is what we should be focused on. In 2 Maccabees, Maccabees was a Jewish historian. It was written, a book written about 200 years before Jesus. And in that book, chapter 15, verse 9, it says, or verse 39, sorry, it is harmful to drink wine alone or again to drink water alone, while wine mixed with water is sweet and delicious and enhances one's enjoyment. According to MacArthur, only barbarians drank wine unmixed, and the mixture of wine and water of equal parts was called strong drink and frowned upon. And so you have this scenario in this particular wedding. And people say, would Jesus have made alcoholic wine for these people to get drunk? They didn't have the wedding for people to get drunk. It wasn't even the intention. It was what we would do, like at our house, I go and buy cases of pop and water so that you, if you're thirsty, you have something to drink. We don't go and buy cases of alcoholic drinks and say, party at the baskets, you know. It's about spending a lot of time together. And you don't want to run out. Right? We don't want to run out of food. Have we ever run out of food? I mean, like the thing we had last Saturday night. I mean, we could have been there another week and still not have run out of food. We had that much food. But it would be an embarrassment to me as a host. It would be an embarrassment to Karen as a host if we invited a bunch of people over and we ran out of stuff. Multiply that. Far greater in their culture. A culture of hospitality, a culture of openness, a culture of sharing, to run out of this wine was a big, big deal. And you say, well, Mike, what does that really mean? Well, I want one more quote. One commentary said, most wine served at weddings or other social gatherings would have had an alcohol content of no higher than 2.75%, well below the 3.2% considered necessary to classify a beverage as alcoholic. So this wedding feast is not about a drunken feast. It has nothing to do with that. So what Jesus is simply doing is it's not about alcoholic wine and non-alcoholic. It's about providing for what his mom has asked him to do. And because of another important facet of this culture, which is to honor your father and your mother, and children should be paying attention to that part, Jesus always honored his father and his mother. Jesus was wonderful about the respect that he showed Mary. In this particular story, she says, hey, you know, and I don't know if she inflected her voice or if she gave him the look. Moms have the look. We know that look. They're out of wine. All right. And so Jesus got it. Jesus knew exactly what she was saying because he actually says to her, what does that have to do with me? Why are you pushing me? In fact, in the message, this passage literally says in the message, don't push me. Right. Jesus looks at Mary and goes, don't push me. Don't make me do something that I don't want to do. And yet her words to him were, or to the servants around him, do whatever he tells you. What great words. Do whatever he tells you. Mary had that much figured out. Now, one more quick thing. Woman. Seems to be an interesting exclamation point in these sermons or in these commentaries. Because Jesus appears to be rude or harsh. I think Mark Lowry, you guys know who Mark Lowry is? He's a Christian comedian. Google his, or YouTube it, his little commentary on woman. He's from Texas, and he says in his little commentary about this particular passage, he's telling the story about Mary, and he says, yeah, in this passage, Jesus looks at Mary and goes, woman, what has, and he goes, let me tell you something, let's stop right there. He goes, I'm from Texas. He goes, if I'd have told my mom, woman, at any point in time in my life, I'd be wearing a necklace with teeth around it, you know, it's like, my teeth. And he says, you didn't say that kind of thing. And so sometimes we read this passage and we say, oh, well, so Jesus is being rude here. No, not at all. In chapter 4 of John, if you remember, he meets with a Samaritan woman around a well. They have a discussion as to where they should worship. Is it on Mount Gerizim? Is it in Jerusalem? And he says, woman, the day is coming when we won't worship on this mountain or in Jerusalem. It'll just be this relationship. In John chapter 8, the woman that's caught in adultery. And they want to stone her. And then Jesus says, hey, if you don't have any sin, you throw the stone. And they all walk away. And he says, woman, where are your accusers? In John chapter 19. And this is a place where we always look and we go, well, this is a wonderful place to use the word woman. Because he looks at John and says, John, here's your mother. And he looks at Mary and goes, woman, here's your son. Is that rude? You know, John chapter 20, Mary Magdalene goes to the tomb. There's two angels there. He says, woman, why are you crying? Later on, Jesus appears as a gardener. Woman, why are you crying? It's a common term. For some reason, they want to make Jesus out to be the bad guy in this particular passage. Woman, what have you had to do with me? It's not like that. It's a sign of respect. There's nothing there. All right. Lots of history. And you say, OK, Mike, that's a lot of information. Give me something give me a point. All right. I mean, I always look at this every time and say, give me a point. What's the point? It's this. Moms, you're going to make mistakes every once in a while. It's going to happen. All right. Dads, if this was a Father's Day sermon, I'd tell you why you're making so many bad mistakes, right? We're going to make mistakes, everyone. We're going to get angry when we're tired. We're going to yell when we don't want to yell. We're going to say the wrong things at the wrong times. We're going to meddle when we shouldn't meddle. And we're going to feel bad about it sometimes. But the thing about it is, we'll always be right. We'll never go wrong. Moms will never go wrong. You will never go wrong. Dads will never go wrong. If the words that we give to our kids are, do whatever Jesus tells you. That's good advice. Regardless of the situation, regardless of the history, regardless of anything else, just remember to do whatever Jesus tells you. And I love the fact that she doesn't tell Jesus how to fix it. She just knows he's going to. And I think that's pretty special. Mary had faith that Jesus was going to do the right thing. She had faith that Jesus could do the right thing. She knew exactly who Jesus was. And I don't know how difficult that must have been for her as a mother to have watched this Jesus grow up. We know that she did an incredible job. We know Joseph did an incredible job because within those few verses that describe him, it says that he grew in wisdom and he grew in stature. You don't get wisdom and stature from just being in a community, although it's probably helpful. You get it from being in a household that teaches that. And I think that's so very important as moms, as dads, that we give to our children this wisdom and this stature, that we give to them the words of Jesus and remind them that they should listen to him at all times. So you'll never go wrong in saying, do whatever he tells you. Because you're going to do wrong things. I'm going to do wrong things, but Jesus is not going to do wrong things. And I think that's really pretty special. Again, is there a more honorable woman in the world that we can... I think of different women. I think of ladies and mothers, and I love my own mother, and I love my wife, who's the mother of my children. And I can think of some wonderful mothers sitting in the audience this morning and sitting in audiences all over the United States and all over the world. But Mary was probably the most honored. And why was that? What was it about Mary that was so special? Heard that. Here he goes. Yeah, and God picked her. She was pure. Who said that? Oh, right there. Sorry. I was like, I thought I heard her up there. My tears come thinking about the times that I was hurt as a kid. I remember, I got all these cool scars. I shoved a knife all the way through my hand and it sticks out to the side. And you're like, oh, that's cool. Right? And walking into a wall, I got this really cool scar in my eye. Because I was acting like I got shot by an Indian with an arrow and I walked into the wall and it shoved into my eyeball and cut my eye open. You got stories? Robbie would be like, I got some stories, right? All the guys got stories. And yet there's the one person there that always was the great comforter. I remember blood coming out of my eye and I remember wiping it and going, oh, like that. My mom goes, oh, it's just a little dirt off of stuff. It's okay. And I was like, Mom, it's blood, you know? She's trying to comfort me and make it nice and sell it down. And I think of Christ when he went to the cross and the suffering and Mom having to deal with that. And what a mom she was because she was there. You know, you don't read a lot about Joseph and we don't know where happened. Most people say that he died at an early age. We don't read that much about him. And not to say that he wasn't a great dad, but Mom was there. Mom was always there. And she was believing in him and pure and wonderful and good. And why God picked her, we can throw out all kinds of stuff. But I love this story because when we can have the faith that Mary had to tell, you know, not only our children, but our nieces and our nephews and our friends and our neighbors and maybe our grandkids along the way. Some of you can do that already. But when we can look at them straight in the eye and say, do whatever Jesus tells you, we've got some things figured out. I think that's important. So, Mary was a wonderful mother to Jesus and a wonderful woman of faith. And so this morning, as we think about that, may we all strive to not only to turn to Jesus in times of trouble, when something's wrong, to know exactly who to go to. I don't know what Mary was expecting, how she was expecting, or what the scenario was going to be when she looked at Jesus with that look, with that eye, and said, they ran out of wine. It's like, woman, what have you to do with me? What does this have to do with all the things that I've got? I haven't even started yet. My time has not yet come. And she goes, maybe you should get started right now. And she gives him that little shove. And I don't know how many of you moms have done that with your own kids. You gave them that little boot. You gave them that little push. Pushed them in the right direction. But
People say, well, that's Jesus is going to do what he wants to do in any regards to this story. I don't think so. I think that his time was going to be at the right time, and it doesn't know exactly how that's going to begin, but I think it was Mary who maybe was excited to see what Jesus was going to do. She was proud of her boy. I'm pretty sure most of you are, right? And you're excited to see what they're going to accomplish. So ladies, thank you this morning for being a special light in the lives of your children, for being an example to them, for showing them, you know, how to live life. And again, I'll say it one last time before we sing our invitation song. If you don't do anything for your children other than help them to realize the most important phrase off of your lips is "Do whatever Jesus tells you," you'll be doing great. Those are some good words from a wonderful mother and a wonderful story. So, if there's anything that we can do for you this morning, if there's something as a congregation that you need help with in any way or any fashion, we're going to sing a song and we're going to stand and sing that right now.